This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson.
Everything employers need to know about COVID vaccinations. My guest today is Debbie Berndorf, employment and labor attorney. Debbie has been practicing law for more than 25 years, including 10 years at major law firms. As a LA-based attorney, she represents employers in all aspects of employment law, including defense of harassment and discrimination claims, wage and hours class actions, disability claims, and misappropriation of trade secrets. Debbie has been named a 2020 Super Lawyer in Employment and Labor. She was previously awarded the Super Lawyer Honor in 2013 and 2015 through 2019. Debbie, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. To get started, do employers need to mandate vaccinations in the workplace?
Well, it depends on the size of the employer. So generally, the answer is no. Generally, employers do not need to mandate unless they are over 100 employees. And if they're over 100 employees, then they will have to require mandatory vaccination policies. So a couple months ago in September, the president came out with something called the Path Out of the Pandemic. And in this plan to get out of the pandemic, one of the policies or one of the requirements that he put forth is that all employers with over 100 employees must mandate vaccinations in the workplace. So they either need to ensure their workers are vaccinated or they need to test weekly. And now, this is the president just did this as part of his plan, and what he required or directed was one of the federal agencies that's responsible for health and safety in the workplace, which is the Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which goes by OSHA for short. The president directed OSHA to develop rules and regulations to implement his plan to have employers with 100 employees or more to ensure that the employees, the workforce, is fully vaccinated or to have testing on at least a weekly basis. And so right now we're a little bit in a holding pattern because OSHA hasn't yet released those regulations. And until they release those regulations, employers, larger employers, don't really know what they're required to do. It's kind of interesting. There's a little bit of a pushback from this federal agency because they are complaining that they are undermanned and underfunded and simply don't have the resources to either enforce these policies. But that being said, they actually got a draft of the regulations to the White House just last week, at the end of last week. So those should be going back and forth between the White House and OSHA, and we should have the regulations, I'm guessing, in probably 2 weeks. And at that point, all large employers will be required to have mandatory vaccination policies in place. And a lot of them are already working on it or have policies in place and are already gearing up for that.
Debbie, is this going to cover employees in the private sector as well as the public sector?
This is all employers with 100 or more employees, private and public.
Okay.
And specifically, all federal workers and federal contractors are also going to be covered, and all healthcare workers who work in any healthcare environment that receives payment from Medicare or Medicaid. So this is a large base requirement.
And this is being referred to as the Biden mandate. Is that how it's being referred to?
That's how I've heard it referred to. I don't know if that's just, you know, me and my clients, but that's how I refer to it.
And for small employers, should they impose the mandate?
So should is really the operative key. Now, right now, there is no requirement. So I think what small employers need to do is they need to do kind of a litmus test amongst their employees, amongst their personal values, in addition to considering the legal factors, and kind of do a pro and con list. So for right now, one of the things that we're seeing, especially in my smaller employers, is we're seeing kind of both sides. We're seeing that vaccinated workers really do not want to work right next to somebody who's unvaccinated. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of concern, and they're voicing those concerns. And also from a legal liability standpoint, all employers, regardless of the size, and actually regardless of whether they're in California or not, are required to provide a safe and healthy workplace for their employees. And so the vaccinated employees who may be forced to work with an unvaccinated person or perhaps somebody who refuses to wear a mask is bringing up the argument saying, hey, employer, you're not providing a safe work environment, and either you need to change or I'm not going to come into the work because I don't feel it's safe. And then, of course, the employer is forced with the decision, what do I do with the employee who won't come to work? Do I fire the employee? Do I put them on a leave? Am I going to face liability for not providing a safe work environment? So that's certainly one of the issues. From the unvaccinated worker standpoint, we're hearing a lot of resentment that they don't want to be forced to vaccinate. They may not even have a particular objection to the vaccination, but they just don't like that they're being forced to be vaccinated. So certainly those are some of the issues that employers need to grapple with when deciding to implement the policies. They also need to decide, and I think before you implement the policy, is what are you as the employer going to do if the employee refuses to get vaccinated? Now, we do have some suggestions for that, and that's going to be the same analysis as for large employers who are now forced with that question, and the answer is not easy. And so we'll go into that a little bit, but certainly from the small employer standpoint, some of the things to think about are the requirement to provide a safe work environment, and the potential for liability, and I have seen these lawsuits already, by the way, where employees are arguing that employers did not provide a safe work environment, and either because the mask mandate wasn't enforced strictly, where a lot of employees maybe were pulling down their mask every time they talked, or were not wearing their mask over their nose, and the employer wasn't enforcing proper use of the mask, and employees feel unsafe and resigned, and then are suing their employer for not providing a safe work environment. There's also a cost to be considered. If the employee gets sick at the workplace because they are exposed to COVID, if you don't have a mandatory vaccination policy, these cases, if the employee gets sick at the workplace, is going to be covered by workers' compensation. There is a legal presumption that if an employee becomes ill with COVID, that it was caused at the workplace and that it will be covered by workers' comp, which may or may not have an effect on premiums. There's also something called exclusion pay, which is a requirement in California that if an employee is exposed to COVID at work and needs to quarantine at home, either because he's been exposed or because the employee is sick, then the employer needs to pay something called exclusion pay. And that's in addition to any paid sick leave that is mandated in the state of California or that the employer otherwise provides. So there is a cost. If an employee even is sick because they because of exposure outside the workplace, the employer still has to pay paid sick leave. So there are paid sick leave costs. And then potentially even liability to third parties, which this is actually something that's kind of new and novel, and I have some employers that are really grappling with. What happens if a customer or a vendor or somebody with whom you do business gets sick because one of your employees exposed them to COVID, could the employer then be liable to that customer or that vendor? And I don't know the answer to those questions because the courts really haven't opined on it. But no doubt those issues are going to be raised and those lawsuits are going to be filed. So there are a lot of issues, certainly, for a small employer to consider when deciding whether or not to issue or to implement a mandatory vaccination policy.
I'm chatting with attorney Debbie Berndorf on employers and COVID. This is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Debbie, I've seen and have read something called the religious accommodation or request for religious accommodation. What is that?
So now under this Biden mandate, which is what I'm calling it, and so large employers need to have a mandatory vaccination policy. So it's really kind of interesting because the vaccination is intrusive. It's invasive. You're forcing somebody to have a shot. And this kind of falls under the gambit of a medical test. And traditionally speaking, or historically speaking, employers have not been allowed to require their employees to undergo medical examinations except under very limited situations. So there are privacy issues. There are medical issues that come into play. So there's a caveat to this mandatory vaccination policy that says that the employer must accommodate an employee if they are unable or unwilling to get a vaccine because of medical or a sincerely held religious belief. In other words, the employer must reasonably accommodate an employee who has a medical or sincerely held religious belief that precludes or prevents them from getting the vaccination. Now, the medical accommodation is pretty straightforward. An employee gets a note from their doctor that says that for some sort of underlying medical reason, they are unable to get the vaccination, and then the employer accommodates that. We'll talk about what kind of accommodations may be allowed. But those are pretty straightforward, and in all honesty, we're not seeing too many of those because the medical community has, for certainly the majority, has endorsed and is advocating in favor of the vaccine. But now then the religious health belief is kind of a whole different animal. We've seen a tremendous amount of requests for accommodations based on religious beliefs. And this has been an area that's not new to vaccinations. People employers are required to accommodate religious beliefs from everything from, if somebody says that they can't work on Friday afternoons because of Sabbath, or if somebody can't undergo some other type of testing because of religious. The process isn't new, but it is being overwhelmingly tested in light of the vaccine because it is such a politically charged and emotionally charged issue. And in fact, I've heard one client who had over 3,000 religious accommodation requests. And what it is if an employee has some religious belief that precludes them or says that they can't get a vaccination. Now, the law says that the belief needs to be sincerely held. And unfortunately, the courts nor the legislature or the executive agency, which is the EEOC, which stands for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the government agency that's giving guidance on this, has not given employers a whole lot of guidance on what they can do to determine whether or not the religious belief is sincerely held or whether or not it's conveniently held for purposes of the vaccination only. They've given us some. The employers can request documentation. And what we have seen, interestingly enough, is employees are going online and buying notes from internet-based pastors that are charging $75 to $150 for a note asking for the religious exemption. And what we're generally finding that if the employee bought the note on the internet or if the note is from an internet-based pastor, there's the credibility for that, for being a sincerely held belief, is probably going to weigh on the side of the that it's not held, that it's more convenient and or specific to the vaccine rather than an actual true belief. But we are finding other beliefs, other people who are saying, who in particular, they're concerned about the use of fetal cells being used in the research and development of the vaccine. And some religions are opposed to the use of fetal cells being used in research. And that's an interesting issue. Although there's an argument. So what we're advising employers that if an employee comes to you and says, I've got a religious belief that I don't want to get the vaccine, ask for documentation and have a dialogue with that employee. That dialogue actually has a specific name under the law. It's called the interactive process, which is basically just a fancy phrase for a dialogue between an employee and an employer to determine whether or not the religious belief is actually sincerely held and whether or not an accommodation can be made. And we encourage employers to ask employees open-ended questions like, you know, how long have you been involved in this religion? What are some of the other edicts of this religion? You know, what things do you do to observe this religion? Do you take Advil? Do you take Tylenol? Do you take Tums? And the reason that we ask for that is because a lot of, or have you received other vaccinations? Have you had a polio vaccine or a smallpox vaccine? Because sometimes we're finding that people are being inconsistent. They've had other vaccinations, but they don't want this one. And the EEOC has been pretty direct, but saying fear of the COVID vaccine is not enough. That does not constitute a religious belief. Fear is not a religious belief. That it has to be really something deeper than that. And a lot of these other medications also use fetal cell in their research. So if they're taking Tylenol, then they can't claim that fetal cells are the reason that they're not taking the vaccine. So we want to have a dialogue. It's an interactive process once somebody comes to the employer with a religious request for a religious accommodation. Then the next question, which is really the tougher question, how do you accommodate that employee? If you believe that it is, or if you determine that it is a sincerely held religious belief. And what I'm working with employers on that is, generally speaking, if the employee has been working remotely during COVID, I think the employer needs to continue to allow the employee to work remotely. I think the courts are going to be hard-pressed to argue that, you know, if the employee could work remotely during COVID, that seems there's no reason why they can't continue to do it. So if the employee can perform their duties remotely, I encourage employers to continue to allow the employee to work remotely.
Debbie Berndorf, labor and employment attorney, shares with us what we need to know, what employers need to know. Employers and COVID. Debbie, to continue, I saw on the newswire this morning that Apple, a large company, obviously, is going just short of mandating vaccinations for employees coming into the office, but they are asking that for them to enter the office, they need to be tested. Do you see this in the large employer area as pretty much setting the pace for other large companies?
I do, and I have clients that are already doing that. They're saying, if you're going to come to the work site, we want you to be tested. And there's two things that are going on in that nature. Number one, you can come to the work site with proof of a negative test. Or second, you can take a test at the work site. And this is something that actually is kind of new, because 6 months ago, we didn't have tests that people could buy over the counter that were FDA approved. And just let me back up a little bit. The employer can require testing, no issue about that, with the caveat that the testing must be FDA approved. In other words, if there is some test that hasn't been FDA approved, and by this we're saying emergency use authorization, not necessarily the full FDA approval, but it can't require the employee to undergo some test that hasn't been FDA or EUA approved. So that any test, whether it's Apple or any other employer, the test must be FDA approved. So that includes the PCR or the, there are some rapid response tests. But I have one client that basically has bought over 600 tests and has that are all FDA approved, because now you can get the over the counter for about $20. You get two tests and has stockpiled them and it has them at the front desk entryway. And the employees need to take that test and wait for the results before they enter the work site. So I think that's becoming very popular. I'm going to do a side note here, though. One of the things that Apple and every other employer that's doing this needs to be very careful, because a lot of their employees are taking the test before they enter the work site. The time clock, or where people, the employees clock in, is usually inside the workplace. But the law is very clear that if an employee is taking the test and has to wait for the result, that is paid time. So employers need to make sure that employees sign in or clock in before they take that test and make sure that that time is paid, even if they get sent home because it's a negative test, if it's a positive test. Employers need to make sure that they're paying their employees for that time.
Debbie, for the few minutes that we have left, how about court actions? What's happening in that area? Anything?
There's a lot going on, and we're kind of seeing a little bit of both sides of the coin. In June, there was a hospital in Texas, in Houston, Texas, that basically said all healthcare workers need to be vaccinated or fired. And over 150 employees were fired or either resigned, and they filed a lawsuit in the Texas court and said this is unfair, and the judge threw it out. So the judge basically gave permission to the hospital to test or terminate. Now, United Airlines, which has been very vocal about its backing behind the vaccine and had a very aggressive policy, got sued. And just last week, the judge came out with a preliminary injunction. And basically, United Airlines was saying you either vaccinate or you go on unpaid leave. And so they got sued by the employees who were forced to go on unpaid leave that basically said it's the same thing as a termination. I'm not getting paid. I'm not getting my benefits. You cut off my cash flow, and that's tantamount to a termination. And the judge granted what we call a preliminary injunction and basically said, hey, I'm not ruling on the merits of it, but what I am concerned is that these employees are not getting paid while we're trying to figure out this issue. And basically forced United to convert those employees that were on unpaid leave to paid leave while they're figuring out whether or not the policy is enforceable or not enforceable. So in the next couple of months, we're going to see a lot of hopefully a clarification and direction from the courts as to what employers can and cannot do. And this is specifically with how to accommodate those employees that will not get vaccinated because of primarily religious beliefs.
Debbie, for our listeners to contact you and to learn more, what's the best way to reach you?
The best way to reach me is certainly through my website. There's a contact us portal. It's www.berndorflaw.com. That's spelled B as in boy, I-R, N as in Nancy, D as in David, O-R-F-L-A-W.com. They can also feel free to email me at dberndorf@berndorflaw.com. And I think we'll put this information where the podcast is. But or also feel free to call us, 310-914-8400 is our office number.
Thank you, Debbie, for the conversation today. Very valuable for our listeners. And we'll see how employers fare in the next several months.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io, powered by InfoGen Labs, Inc. keep calm, and keep listening.
You've been listening to The Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on The Anderson Files.